Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hello, Negotiations Ninja listeners. You've got Mark here from the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Welcome to this throwback edition of the show where we talk to Dr. David Matsumoto on understanding body language in the age of web conferencing. How do we do that? What do we look for? What do we see? What are the things that give away intentions and ideas, maybe underlying interests, positions? What are the thought processes that are going on between and behind someone's facial expressions? David Matsumoto answers all those questions and more in this amazing edition of the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Enjoy. David, how are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me again.
I am so excited to have you back on, man. The first interview that we did together went swimmingly. I think a lot of our listeners got a ton of value out of it. And you're one of a handful of people in the world that I consider to be sort of the gurus of facial expressions and body language and all that kind of stuff. So we appreciate you being on.
See, that just goes to show that I've got you fooled like a lot of them.
Yeah, well, that's clearly your body language is selling it, right?
There you go.
For the listeners who don't know about you, David, maybe you could give them a bit of background as to who you are and what you do.
Absolutely. Well, once again, thank you very much for having me. And it is my honor to be with you and all of your listeners. My name is David Matsumoto. I'm a professor of psychology at San Francisco State University, where I've been for 31 years. I do research on emotion, facial expressions, nonverbal behavior in general, and culture. I do that research in various kinds of settings. I do a lot of basic research, which is basically means you do stuff that's really about the nature and function of those topics, like emotion and face and all that kind of stuff. And then I do a lot of applied research. Most of it, it's in investigative interviews and things like that. I also run a company named Humantel, and I'm the director of that company, where we do research, consultation, and training, leveraging nonverbal behavior, mostly in situations like investigative interviewing, detecting deception, threat assessment, and the social influence. And so that kind of rounds up my day-to-day activities. At night, when before COVID hit, I'm a judo player. And so I do judo. I've done judo all my life. I've run a judo club for most of my life here, which has been shut down since March, but that's another story. And I've been a part of the U.S. coaching staff for the USA Judo and been to a couple of Olympic games here and there and whatnot. So that's my nightlife, doing judo.
Fantastic. I thought you were going to say you fight crime as Batman or something. Which is basically the same thing, right? Judo coach, Batman, kind of the same thing.
You know, I look for the light every night from Gotham City to call somebody else. You know? Yeah.
The Matsumoto signal or whatever.
It's got to be in kanji or something, but not the bat, you know?
Awesome. Well, listen, I want to start the conversation off with really a discussion around how web conferencing technology has affected how people perceive body language or facial expressions in discussions. As you know, our listeners are salespeople, procurement people, hostage negotiators, and they use web conferencing technology now as a substitute for the real thing. And many of us are getting more and more comfortable with it. But what I found is that it's affected how people think about negotiation. So, how have you seen how technologies like Zoom or Teams have affected people's approach to body language in negotiation or facial expressions in general?
In my experience, and again, this is experience and not data, and I think that there's probably very little research, systematic research that's been going on in this kind of technology so far. But my experience with it is that there's different camps around this. One that kind of just totally ignores the fact that you've got all the cues there, or to some extent, right? Like faces and gestures and whatnot, and just focuses on their words and kind of ignores the fact that we've got video there, which is why some people are caught doing kind of crazy things on video because they forget they're on video, right? So there's that one camp. And then there's the other camp who kind of just, they didn't forget it, but they ignore it. And so they're just entirely focused on something else. They're looking, it's weird, right? You got the camera on top of your monitor, but you're looking down on the person's face. And so you kind of have that disconnect. Whereas in real life, we're looking at the person's face at the same time, right? And so there's people who are ignoring it and then people who forget about it. And I think that both are kind of unfortunate. I mean, it almost gives to some type of argument to just get away from the video because and go back to telephone. Because I think with telephone, some people are more in tune with what they're saying and can be more strategic and whatnot. You know, and I hear a lot of people who are actually doing that more or turning on the Zoom and not turning on the video. Because I think the fact that it's like this is just either distracting or does something to our perceptual or cognitive systems that either distorts what we think we see or we just ignore it so that we don't see it or we don't think we see it. You know, so I hope I'm making sense, but definitely this, I don't want to focus on Zoom because Zoom is one kind of technology. There's other technology, but this remote technology with video conferencing is certainly changing and creating a little bit more havoc than I think most people thought in the beginning.
Yeah, I've noticed, and I would agree with you on all of those things. I've noticed that web conferencing technology in general has somehow lulled people into like a weird false sense of security. And I want to pick up on something that you said there, almost like they're ignoring the camera. And so what ends up happening when you have these types of conversations is facial expressions that they would usually have maybe on the phone, thinking someone wouldn't be able to see them. They're now showing those same facial expressions over cameras. And the downfall to that is if you're in a negotiation, what's ending up happening is I can immediately start seeing what's hitting and what's not hitting. And you, for whatever reason, have this perception that no one can see me because for whatever reason, there's a screen in front of me and whatever it might be. And I find that it's created some really unique advantages and disadvantages. What do you think are some of maybe the disadvantages that we have when we feel like we're not being viewed? Because in normal face-to-face communication, I feel like, you know, it's pretty normal that, you know, we feel like we're going to be judged, right? And we understand that connection. But when we subconsciously or consciously feel like we're not being viewed, that opens up the door to a whole bunch of potential failures in negotiation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's related to the disconnect that I was mentioning earlier, because we're not, you know, because of the disconnect of where we're looking and all this kind of thing, and the fact that we're in technology and not face-to-face kind of turns on or off some things in our head. And we kind of forget a lot of, so you're exactly right. I mean, in normal discourse, what we've got is we, not only are we trying to convey a message and hear a message, but while we're doing that, we're also engaged in impression management, which is what you mentioned. And part of the thing with the disconnect is that we forget the part about impression management. And impression management is so important in those kinds of situations you're talking about, because nonverbal behavior are signs of things in our mind. And when we are on top of the impression management, well, we want to be on top of the impression management because we don't want others to know everything, more of the contents of our mind than we want them to know.
Yes.
Essentially, that's what it is. And what we're seeing is that when we have that disconnect, it's easier to forget the impression and management part.
Yes.
And then have people that broadcast, then we start broadcasting these signals. And the astute person can then take them and leverage them to our disadvantage, which is why in normal discourse, we have more of a lid on it. We try to be a little bit more conscious about what we're doing. But you know, there's great negotiators out there, whether they're in the business negotiation world or the law enforcement negotiation world or the intelligence negotiation world. There are people out there whose primary focus is to find a way to push your button, to get you off your game. And they're the ones that are on those signals that you're emitting, you're broadcasting, just like, and you know, it's like these radio waves. We can't see them, but we're broadcasting them. And so once we forget that, it's like we're in an anonymous theater, but they've got the x-ray or the darkened theater vision that they can see you. Of course, they're going to leverage that. We would as well. And so that's entirely the disadvantage. Now, the advantage, of course, is when we can see them and we can stay on top of that process. But yeah, you're exactly right. Once that disconnect occurs, I can, you know, once I click this button, I think something is different. And so I don't have to worry about anything. And that's not entirely true. I mean, you know, we have to be on our game just as, if not even more, because the context allows us to lull ourselves to a sense of complacency.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I feel like there's if you've recognized this, you almost feel like you have to overcompensate on some macro expressions to make sure that the counterparty understands that there's a connection between what you're saying and how you feel on a lot of things. And so I'd love to dive into just macro expressions in general and talk about that for a second on some of the things that we need to take note of in our own behavior on Zoom to make sure that we're communicating effectively with our facial expressions. So when we talk about macro expressions, for a lot of people, that may be a sort of an unknown term. Can you explain to the listeners what macro expressions are?
Absolutely. Macro expressions, I'm going to talk about macro expressions in regard to facial expressions, but you can apply that to all aspects of nonverbal behavior. And macro expressions are the expressions that we have when we don't feel the need to control or suppress them. They're just naturally occurring. They're spontaneous. They generally tend to be as large as you feel them or as they represent a mental state in you. And they are as they are, essentially. And with facial expressions, with regard to facial expressions of emotion, when an emotion occurs, they're on our faces from as fast as half a second to 4 or 5 seconds, which is a long time. And they're easy to read in normal everyday discourse. The same is true for our gestures, as well as our posture, as well as our tone of voice and the clarity by which we enunciate things. So we can use that analogy of macro expressions to all the channels of nonverbal behavior, as opposed to micro expressions, which are small, micro, very tiny bits of those behavior that kind of leak out because we're trying to control them. Those are micro expressions. We're not talking about that. We're talking about macro expressions. And so that's what macro expressions are. I know your listeners can't see this, but you are doing a great example of trying to do that great communication because you're natural in what your presentation is. I don't know if you noticed, but you use these gestures just as if we were in a face-to-face interaction, and I'm doing them too. And you know what? It's really interesting with me. I noticed in the very beginning of the Zoom boom that we started back in March, I turn on the thing, and of course, I've done this before. But because we had to do it more, I'd turn it on and I'd be like this talking about, and it was hard for me to communicate well until I said, just let it loose. And so then I started to use my gestures just as I would in normal discourse. And it's now it's easier for me to communicate. And I pay more attention to the message, both in terms of my words and the clarity by which I say them in my voice. And now I'm projecting it in my hands and as well as my facial expressions. And I think that helps to reduce ambiguity in this situation. However, there's still the other issue, which is I try to look at camera, which is what everybody, you know, people try to get you to do. But then I'm not gauging your reaction when I'm looking at camera, which is what we miss in everyday discourse, right? In everyday discourse, I can be engaging in this kind of normal flow of my process, but I would also be watching your process as we're engaging. And we can't do that in Zoom. So if I do that in Zoom, now I'm looking down and you're seeing me looking away. And people then have a disconnect. Oh, that person's looking away. You know, and you got to overcome that in your mind. No, they're just looking at the camera. You know what I mean? So then we got these additional baggage that occurs one way or the other.
Yeah. And I find it's hard to recognize, are they looking away? Are they looking at a camera? Is that affecting the flow of conversation? How is it affecting the flow of conversation? Oh, Something that I've tried to do is you write about the 7 basic human emotions and how they're expressed on your face. I've tried to start overcompensating on many of those emotions in my negotiations to make sure that the counterparty fully understands sort of where I'm at. Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get started And you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. Top to bottom, could you maybe educate the listeners on those seven universal emotions and the facial expressions?
Sure. All humans are wired with the ability to portray or express seven emotion families. They're anger, contempt, disgust, fear, happiness, sadness, and surprise. Of course, they're not the only emotions that we experience and express, but they're the ones that are primarily can be expressed in our facial expressions. We have other expressions like pride, triumph, shame, embarrassment that we use other parts of our body for. No question about that. But in our faces, which is what we're looking at primarily in Zoom and most interactions, it's one of those seven facial emotion categories or families. I mention emotion family because even though each of those labels is a prototypical name for a host of emotions within that family that include all of the synonyms of different intensities. So like anger has frustration, pissed off, annoyed, blah, blah, blah on one end, two, enraged, hostile, and all of that on the other end, and everything in between, they all are portrayed by that one type of face and or bits and parts of that face. And so there, even though there are seven facial categories or facial prototypes, they actually portray many, many different emotions in our lexicon. So that's what the seven universal faces are. Going back to your point, which I think is really, really interesting, to be able to use our nonverbal behavior in general, and especially our facial expressions in particular in Zoom, strategically is really a good thing, right? Because when we're in a negotiation, again, in normal everyday discourse, we know this, we're in impression management. I want to manage the other person's impression of me. And in addition to that, I want to accent my words with my nonverbals, which also contributes to the impression management. And thus we get to use, what we want to do is use our nonverbals in a very strategic fashion. Now, having said that, people would then ask me often, oh, so how do you do that? And here's what I suggest not thinking about doing, which is, I'm going to use my hand this way 10 times, and I'm going to go use my face this way 3 times. Because what that's going to do, you can recreate sort of the expression. Number one, it won't be an exact replica because timing characteristics are different. And number two, people, if they're actually watching, notice artificiality immediately.
Yes.
And we all make judgments of genuineness and honesty. And those judgments are really tied into judgments of trustworthiness. Any kind of meaningful negotiation, those are very important judgments to have on both sides, especially on the other side if you're trying to get them to persuade them to do something. And so I generally don't say start thinking mechanically about what to do. Start with a mindset of I'm going to express this better. I'm going to be clearer this way. I'm going to project this way.
Yes.
Because I understand nonverbal behavior as output of internal states. And I want to set a state. And I want to set an intention, for example, of this interaction. And then it'll flow a little bit easier or more easily than if I tried mechanically to do it. Because if you do it mechanically, you're going to try to remember, how many times did I do that now? And you're going to get lost. And that's going to be another thing to think about. And it's just, things get worse after that.
Yeah. I find, and I totally agree with you, that I think people's BS meters are really dialed in pretty well these days. And they notice that on, especially if you see a politician talking or someone like that, where they're like, oh, I don't believe a thing that that person said, just based on how their body language flowed and the words and the body language and the facial expressions, they're not congruent, right? They don't line up. I think we've got to be, that's why my caution to the listeners is you've got to be really careful about the congruency of your message on web conferencing, because if people see that, you know, you don't believe, you may have the tone of voice down, you may have the sentence structure down, the pitch, the pace, everything may be perfect. But if your face and your body language don't line up with that and it's not congruent, then that's going to be really be off. And so I think for the listeners, one of the main themes of the conversation that we've had with David today, I want you to take away that congruency is so important and making sure that you're realizing that you're still on camera, you're still being perceived, someone still is developing a perception of you. And all of that stuff has to align. So just be very cautious. If you're not confident in that, turn the camera off, right? Just to make sure that you can continue to practice that. And what something that I found, I don't know if you might agree with this or not, David, but I found practicing my negotiations and role-playing my negotiations in front of myself in the mirror and recording myself even have proven to be very beneficial, because I can play those recordings back and go, I don't even believe what I'm saying there, right? Like, I got to practice this.
Oh man, you make so many points that I've got so many associations with, but let's start with the last one. Oh my God, yes. If you have a chance to role play and video record yourself, take a look. Everybody hates role playing and video recording themselves, but do it. It's the best way to know what you're doing. And Zoom kind of forced us to do that, because if you're like most people, you have your audio video on and you can kind of see what you're doing, although you don't look at yourself most of the time, right? So when you actually record yourself for training and then you go back and actually look at what you're doing, most of us are very surprised that all the things that we're doing, that we're producing, all the signals we're producing, that's just irrelevant and sometimes contradictory to our goals.
Yes.
That's number one. And you're exactly right. Do that. But going back, I mean, you're so right on the congruence, and I can talk a lot about congruence and discongruence and or incongruence in verbal and nonverbal signaling and whatnot. There's a large research base about that, by the way, and it's all tied into genuine signaling and honesty and trustworthiness and all that kind of stuff. I do want to say video conferencing sets us up for incongruence.
Yes.
Just by internet problems. When we have internet problems, then all of a sudden your face is not sync with your voice or something's going on with that. You may not even intend it, but the technology is going to create the incongruence. Thus, going back to your other point, that macro clarity would reduce, even kind of override even technological issues, because there's a technological issue there to consider. And that's all in line with what we're talking about. And again, that authenticity, when you're saying that trying to be incongruous, it's all about perceptions of authenticity, making sure that, and it starts with your own mindset. Now, the question is, what authenticity about what, right? You can be authentic to yourself without having to tell your interlocutor what's on your mind. It's about your authenticity, about your message. And knowing what that is and being authentic, starting with that mindset, will help produce the authenticity in the nonverbals, in your faces, in your voice, along with whatever words you've gotten. So, I mean, I hope I got those three or four points that I
Brilliantly. Yeah, I think the main message here for the listeners is just practice as much as you can. And do yourself a favor and pick up David's book. I want to talk about that for a second, David. Can you tell the listeners a bit about the book, what it's all about, and why people, especially these listeners, need to read it? By the way, I have a copy and it's fantastic.
Great. Mark, you're talking about nonverbal communication?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, that nonverbal communication, it's not a huge book. We wrote that for practitioners. It's all about the nonverbal communication. It has a chapter. There's two parts. The first part is a chapter each on each of the channels and talks about the research that's existed at that time. It's about 8 years old now, but research base doesn't change that much. And talks about what the major knowledge that we have for each of the channels, like faces and voices and whole body movements and whatnot. The second part of the book actually is much more exciting to me. And it's that written by people who we've trained to read nonverbals and how they've applied it in their life. So we got negotiators, we got law enforcement officers, we got polygraph examiners, we got judges and physician. And that's really interesting because it shows how people can leverage basic science for their advantage in their everyday lives. And thanks for mentioning that. But yeah, I really like that book because to tell you the truth, I don't like the first part as much as I like the second part, because the first part is that academic stuff, you know, and it's kind of boring to me.
But it's important, right? Because it ties in the science so well. And I think a lot of people, when they read nonverbal communications books, they're like, is this really a thing, right? Like, does this really work? And the fact that you tie it into, here's the research, right? Here's the science. Yeah. That's super beneficial.
Yeah, thank you. That's exactly the reason why we wrote it. And as anyone knows, you go online and you search for nonverbal behavior or stuff like that. There's a lot of people who say stuff, right? And to tell you the truth, a lot of it is not based in science. And to be honest, there's not everything has been tested in science. I get that. But whatever we come out with, whether in terms of our training and advice, is always stuff that's been validated in science, vetted in the field. And we're on those two principles in everything that we talk about. And so that's where we differentiate ourselves with others in this field.
Yeah, I love it, man. And I love the work that you do. where do people go if they want to find out more about you, the book, HumanTel? Where's the best place to go?
Thanks a lot. Come and visit our website, humantel.com. That's HumanTel.com. And there you find some resources. Sign up for our mailing list. You get these interesting articles that are coming out. And in our blogs also, we take, it's not just personal experience stuff, which is also valuable now. I like that. But we generally try to tie science, emerging science in to that stuff. In this month, we've actually updated some of our most popular blogs. We just had one on the universe, an update, what new science says about the universal facial expressions, which you mentioned earlier. We just let one out today on emotions and critical thinking, which is related to our discussion right now. And it will be tied with one that's going to come out, I think, 2 or 3 weeks from now on the elemental component, the least common denominator of all training programs to regulate our emotions. So I've got that coming out in 2 or 3 weeks.
I read the article that you wrote on emotions and critical thinking. One of the lines that you had in there that I thought was brilliant is you said, we don't have emotions, emotions have us.
Yeah.
And I thought that's so clever because so often we let our emotions really control the scope of the discussion that we would have, especially if we get angry or flustered or whatever it might be, our emotions immediately kick in and then we lose all ability to think critically and like discern judgment and all that kind of stuff. And it's fascinating stuff. We've got to have you back on to talk about how emotions affect critical thinking and negotiations, I think.
I'm so happy you picked up that line because you had that line. You know, I've said that all the time in our training and I wrote that down there. And I think it's a little switch in words that has profound implications for our understanding of that thing. And so thanks for picking that up.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, thank you so much for being on. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. We're going to have you back on to talk about emotion and how it affects critical thinking. But thank you so much for being on.
It's always my pleasure for you, Mark. You take care.
Hey, friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.